ExchangeWire's ATS Singapore conference returns on July the 2nd, featuring the latest insights from an exceptional group of speakers highlighting future challenges and breakthroughs in media, marketing, and commerce. Visit exchangewire.com/events to get your ticket now. And for an exclusive 10% discount, use the code PODCAST10 at the checkout.
Welcome to the Mad Tech Podcast from ExchangeWire, bringing you the latest news and views from the world of ad tech, media, and marketing.
Hello, and welcome to the Mad Tech Podcast. I'm Grania Reid, ExchangeWire's Head of Marketing and your host for today. I'm delighted to welcome back JJ Eastwood, Managing Partner of Retail Media at Willow & Joe Consulting. JJ, how are you?
I'm great, thanks. How are you? Good. Thanks for having me back. My goodness. Second time appearance on any podcast.
Yeah, it's great. It's been about 4 years and a lot has changed since then. So yeah, it's great to have you back this week. And alongside JJ, we have ExchangeWire's Head of Content, John Still. John, how are things?
Good, thank you very much. As always, lovely to be here.
Well, in this episode, we'll be discussing Amazon's retail media ad revenue, Nectar 360 and OMG's beta retail media partnership, as well as ChatGPT's publisher referral traffic. So let's dive into our first news story. According to Work, Amazon achieved a 17.7% ad growth in Q1 of 2025, outpacing the 16% expansion forecast for the retail media market. Work's latest media forecast predicts Amazon to earn $60.6 billion US dollars in retail media ad revenue in 2025, not including ad spend with Amazon-owned properties such as Prime Video and Twitch. The figure is expected to climb to $69.7 billion US dollars in 2026. So JJ, I'm going to go to you first. With Amazon expanding into full funnel activation, including streaming TV and DSP advertising, how do you think brands and marketers should rethink their ad strategies to leverage this shift?
Well, I think before we get to that, I think it's super important to point out, and this is a big sort of wake-up call for a lot of retailers that I'm speaking to as well, is that these Amazon numbers are astounding. I spoke to an Amazon exec about 6 months ago, and while he didn't give me the exact number, he said that around 90% of that revenue is still on-site, specifically sponsored product ads, which I think is really important point for any retailer considering a retail media network, how important it is to focus on a really robust sponsored product offering. New research came out about a week ago from a company called Pendeleap, and it found that Amazon serves sponsored product ads on around 99% of search queries. Now, to put this in perspective, most of the retailers that I'm speaking to are serving ads at around 50%, and some can't even tell you what the sell-through rates are. However, it's not just about higher impression volumes. You know, this obviously signals that Amazon have developed a really significant relevance algorithm, because despite the high ad density, their click-through rates and conversion rates are on par with organic listings, which is quite astonishing. So some of the retailers that I'm speaking to, some of them are just putting up their hands and saying, okay, given Amazon's dominance in this area, they're zigging, we're going to zag, we're going to focus on in-store, create immersive branded experience. But just to go back to your point about connected TV, I think out of the three kind of main channels, particularly in retail media, you know, online, off-site, and in-store, I think there's almost too much buzz about the off-site. It's an interesting component, but if you think about Amazon, right, 90% of their revenue is coming from on-site. Only 10% is off-site. Now, that's a huge, huge number. It's probably around $6 billion, probably more than the Trade Desk. But if you were to compare that with any other retailer, off-site is getting all the attention as this like a shiny new thing. Whereas in my mind, the other two are way more important to get right. Get your on-site right, get your in-store right, and then the off-site will be a nice sort of cherry on the cake, if you like.
That's a good point. And John, do you have anything to add to that versus like the on-site and in-store? getting that right?
No, I think like a lot in what JJ said is I agree with. We've read the same Pentaleap report this week, so I was about to quote the same stats. So you've gone in ahead of me there, JJ, which is I'm now floundering for anything to say. It is hard to even think about competing with Amazon in this space. You know, like JJ said, they offer sponsored products on 99% of searches, which is, you know, that's incredible. I think there's only Walmart who can even really get close to that in terms of what the report had said. And I'm not surprised to hear JJ say that some people are just holding their hands up and saying, right, yeah, we're going to have to just compete on in different levels. And on that point of the on-site versus off-site, like, the on-site stuff is so important, and off-site is an interesting way of reaching people. It's a new kind of opens new avenues, but getting the on-site right is the most important thing. And this is where Amazon will always have that like monstrous competitive advantage because of the scale of the operation. It's massive. I would agree with JJ on a kind of getting your install right, getting your on-site getting that stuff in a row before going big on off-site.
Yeah. No, good point. How do you think Amazon has evolved as a retail giant to be a dominant player in digital advertising? And the figures that we've seen, what does the projected $60 billion in ad revenue mean for the industry? John, we'll go to you on this one.
Frightening in terms of the dominance and the scale of it, and the, you know, that $60 billion in ad revenue is incredible, and it has evolved from, you know, this from initially almost 30 years ago as starting as a bookseller and then into this huge platform. But it's evolved through its, you know, the scale and the data use, and it's got hands in every pie. It's really hard to argue with it as a proposition for advertisers, because they've got an automatic link between a CTV platform and a retailer, or a gaming platform and a retailer. It's this huge, I've spoken about it before, it's like this, the Amazon tentacles that get into everything. And it's a powerful proposition. So no surprise to see those numbers, but they are like, yeah, huge.
JJ, what are your thoughts on the projected $60 billion?
Well, if it makes complete sense when you think about it. If you think about Google and Facebook, why have they been so dominant? How have they grown to be the size that they are today? Serving ads that are effective. And, you know, a lot of brands almost have infinite budgets whenever they continue to see a really strong return on ad spend. And I think that's just the important point. Whenever I'm speaking to retailers, you know, it's not just a tick the box if you're speaking to a vendor that says that they offer sponsored products. You got to understand, okay, well, how does it compete with Amazon's offering? Because that's what people have got used to. You know, is it very simple for that mid to long tier, relatively small brands to run these campaigns? Is it delivering really strong results? Like, are you able to increase your ad density and have click-through rates on par with organic listings? That's incredible. If you have a vendor that can show you case studies like that, and I have seen some that have, they do have very strong algorithms on par with Amazon. And because I think when I speak to a lot of retailers, they don't think to go a few layers deeper. There's a number of things which you got to get right. Is it easy to run a campaign? Does it drive really strong performance? And is it giving some sort of insights that are useful beyond just the advertising world? You know, can you take these insights to run campaigns from a more branding perspective? Tick all of these boxes. It's absolutely no surprise Amazon's where it's at. And I think there's a lot of learnings that other retailers can take from this.
Yeah. Definitely. And I guess on that point, how does Amazon's retail media dominance affect these smaller players in the landscape? Because, yeah, it's difficult for them. What are you seeing, JJ?
It's interesting that the retailers that I speak to, some of them have said to me explicitly what I said before. They've said, we're just not going to compete with Amazon in this digital advertising world. We will have an offering 90% of our sales happen in store, 80 to 90% in a lot of it. So where we think we can win in retail media is where Amazon doesn't play, and that's in store. How do we create amazing branded experiences that is not just about retail media, but it's also providing a much better in-store experience for consumers anyway? I think that's really interesting. Some of the mock-ups and the designs that I've seen for these in-store experience are really exciting. So hopefully we see a lot of that soon.
John, what do you think on this?
Yeah, I think JJ's dead on in terms of the in-store experiences and creating those kind of, you know, away from where Amazon are, being really strong in those areas. Also, like, niches and specialisms, like there's a real market there for to be very, very good, but in your own niche rather than the generalist. You're not going to be able to compete with Amazon on the more general side of things, but if you have a strong audience base in a particular area, then there's always going to be room for players who are very, very good and very strong in those areas. So yeah, I mean, it's, you know, we're always talking about the fragmentation of it, but I'd say that the spaces to play that are not taking on Amazon at its own game, because you can't, is, yeah, the in-store, the brand experience, and to, yeah, be strong in your own specialism and your niche.
How are the Chinese-based platforms like Temu and Shein disrupting retail media advertising? And what impact does their aggressive ad spend have on global brands? JJ?
I'm not hearing... In this market, in Australia and Southeast Asia, I haven't heard about them disrupting the retail media proposition particularly. Now, I do hear from the retailers how it's affecting their businesses more broadly. But from an advertising perspective, it's not something that comes up in conversations.
And do you think then that we need fiercer competition just in the retail sector in general?
Yeah, and it's there. And I think these guys, they play a very specific role. I think everyone, if you want a certain kind of product, relatively cost effective, that, you know, is certainly not going to be built for a lifetime, these players will have their part. The retailers that I generally speak to, the ones that are beyond the food and FMCG categories, they tend to have a higher quality offering or a higher ticket price. And generally, you would want to either do some more research online or have the ability to go in store and see these products and touch and feel them. If it's a furniture client, obviously sit on them. So I think that they will serve this niche in the market and perhaps are more competitive than Amazon than the traditional big retailers that have such a dominance in the offline world.
John, what are you thinking from a competitor side?
Yeah, I mean, I'm just thinking of Temu makes me laugh, because I dabbled in it recently just to see what it was all about because of the aggressive advertising. I was like, all right, let's see what I can do. And I looked for some, I was looking for some running shoes and kind of looking at the normal high-level brands that were coming in at like 180, 190 quid for a pair of carbon plate running shoes. And Temu offered them for £20 in the advert. So I clicked on it to see what they looked like. And then I got a spin wheel that gave me 100% off. So they were going to send me these carbon plate running shoes for free. And I thought, crikey, one more spin, I'm going to make money on having these running shoes. But it's that, like, that's the disruption, is the price, I think, is, you know, where they're offering like the aggressive branding and they're offering incredibly inexpensive goods, which is attractive. And I know Amazon have already made moves to have a cheaper marketplace to rival that. But it's, yeah, I think there's still, it'll take away, you know, like we've seen with China as well. It'll, you know, they take a lot of business, but I don't think it's directly competing a way that's ever going to damage Amazon. That's more kind of the next level in terms of like inexpense and ease, I suppose.
Yeah, no, that's interesting. Question about the trainers. Did you end up buying them?
I didn't. I decided to do some research.
Right.
It was suggested that even, you know, a pair that inexpensive would not be good for my knees. So I decided to. I've not gone for the high level ones yet. I'm still in the deciding mode. But now I thought the free running shoes might be a really bad idea for my ankles.
Good poll. Make your investment down the line.
But then, you know, it could. I did have that other thought as well. It's like maybe the price I'm being sold on for running shoes that I feel give me confidence in them is just nonsense, and I'm just being sold them cost price through Temu, and they're no different. They're as good quality. They're just being sold to me without all the branding and add-ons. So I'm back and forth, G, to be honest. I'll let you know if I come into the office on crutches one week, then you'll know I've bought the Temu trainers.
I think you need to test it. Buy both pairs, trial them out, and then give a review.
That's it. Yeah, I'll start a YouTube channel for for reviewing cheap trainers.
Great. Well, let's move on to our second story of the week, still on the retail topic. Nectar 360 has expanded its partnership with Omnicom Media Group UK to collaborate on retail media initiatives. The partnership provides OMG with enhanced access to Nectar 360's insights, enabling their clients to gain a deeper understanding of the impact of retail media on their business objectives. How extensive are the benefits of a deal like this for agencies and advertisers? JJ, what are your thoughts?
There's a ton of benefits specifically for the agencies. Getting access to Nectar 360 data and insights would be super valuable for OMG. This, in my mind, is an interesting development. And I know Group M is maybe partnering with some retail media networks in the UK as well. And the UK seems to be a little bit different from what I'm witnessing in this region and in North America, where retail media networks seem to be partnering more directly with publishers. A couple of examples off the top of my head would be Target and NBC Universal, Kroger and Roku. In Australia, the retailers that I'm speaking to, most of them, the 90%+ of their revenue is coming directly from their suppliers and the relationships that they have there. Very little is going through agencies at the moment. So I would guess that that would indicate that the publisher partnerships are probably more likely to happen in this region, specifically for CTV. And then this CTV, like if you think about a direct publisher, CTV publisher and retailer partnership, that kind of gives weight to this conversation about these lightweight DSPs with low fees. You know, if you think about what I mean by lightweight DSP, a traditional DSP, it has to ingest so many bid calls from the open internet. But if you have maybe sort of 5 to 10 partnerships with publishers, you don't need all the bells and whistles of a trade desk, for example. Obviously, it's nice to have, but there is a lot of talk about these lightweight DSPs being able to ingest calls directly from publishers and for retailers. So I think that's a really interesting development. We'll sort of see how what happens in the next, you know, 12 to 24 months.
Have you seen many results from these lightweight DSPs and the partnerships on that side, or is there still time needed?
I haven't seen many results, no. There hasn't been any publisher partnerships with retailers announced yet in Australia, but I have been speaking to some of the ad tech vendors that are providing ad servers, are providing sponsored product offerings, and they've a couple, specifically two that I can think of, have talked about these lightweight DSPs that they've built. Now, if I go back, I worked at a DSP 10 years ago, and I would have thought that a lightweight DSP wouldn't make much sense. But when I was at Rakuten, for example, we bought two DSPs, and I remember asking our CTO, hey, why do we still use the trade desk whenever we have bought two of our own DSPs? And he said to me, look, if we were to use our own DSP for the retargeting that we want to do on the open internet, we'd have to spend an extra $20 million upgrading our servers to be able to ingest all the bid requests that are coming through. So that makes sense. A lightweight DSP makes sense if you don't have to go to the open internet and absorb all of these bid requests coming through. And you can just have, as I said, sort of 5 to 10 partnerships directly with the publisher. So it'll be interesting to see. I think there was an AdExchanger article that came out a few weeks about the rise of these and a call for lower fees as well. So we'll see how it develops.
Yeah, it's really interesting. John, just on this partnership, what benefits outside of what JJ said do you think is likely?
I think for me, it's again another story that's about the agencies waking up to data. I know that sounds, that sounds like they should have been doing it for a long time, but we've seen this year with Publicis buying Lotame and WPP buying InfoSum, we're seeing agencies really kind of going in all in on the power of data and how they'll use that to inform AI. And this is another example of that, like the teaming up with Nexa 360, they've got a great deal of insight in terms of retail data, and agencies are trying to secure their future and get as much of a foothold where they can. And so for me, it's the waking up to the potential of retail media and also the need for information that comes with that and the way of doing it well.
Yeah, no, definitely. I guess I was going to ask whether we think agencies should be looking to strike similar deals like this where possible. You're both definitely in agreement with that. And I'm guessing just from conversation too that publishers should be exploring this more. Do you think we're going to see a lot more of this?
I'm surprised about this, to be honest. I think it's not the trend that I thought was going to happen. As John mentioned, it's definitely a boon for the agencies. But if you think about it, agencies have always had so much power over publishers. I've sat in many agency conversations over the years where like, hey, we didn't hit our $10 million, commitment, but we still want to get our rebate. And if you don't pay it, then we just won't do business with you next year. So, okay. But that power dynamic changes in this new world where retailers are the new digital publishers, because the retailers have owned the direct relationships with these suppliers for, many, many years. And they, in my mind, would have much more skin in the game with the suppliers than the agencies even would. Now, that's not to say that the retailers and the retail media networks aren't going to want to work with agencies and there's going to be deals to be had. But I was thinking that it's going to be much more around the retailers doing direct deals with publishers as opposed to doing deals with agencies. Because if you think about it, right, a publisher is not, or a retailer is not going to want to put their data into an agency's DSP, for example, to run campaigns. They'll want to do that themselves and have it all within there, and they'll be able to track attribution and everything like that. It does make sense that agencies will be involved and they can potentially run the campaigns like Walmart are doing through their white label version of the Trade Desk. But I didn't think I would see a lot of these deals announced. And look, I've been wrong many times in the past, but I don't see any evidence of these things in the pipeline in this region anyway.
Great. Well, I think we can move on to our third and final story for the week, which is around ChatGPT. So according to SimilarWeb data shared with DigiDay, 83% of the traffic OpenAI's generative AI platform sent to external websites went to news and media sites in April. That's up from 64% in January. Referral traffic from ChatGPT is also continuing to grow. ChatGPT sent 243.8 million visits to 250 news and media websites in April 2025, which was up 98% from 123.2 million visits this January. JJ, how encouraging are these figures? And what does the near doubling of ChatGPT's driven referral traffic mean for publishers?
Well, I think it highlights in the article that the doubling isn't perhaps the most exciting thing because it's coming off quite a low base. But what I took with a lot of encouragement from the article is that it sort of indicates that ChatGPT's referring traffic to premium publishers as one of the things it calls out. And it's directing traffic to reputable news and media sites, which I think is super encouraging. It sort of indicates that ChatGPT is only surfacing links to high quality, authoritative sources. you know, emphasizing on trust and fact-based content. Now, that is really exciting to me. Hopefully, this is going to be like the nail in the coffin for advertising sites and all of that junk you have in the open internet. But it's not going to be the silver bullet that the publishers kind of need with the loss of traffic that they're getting from Google. Now, bringing it back to retail media, like I always tend to do, and another similar article came out in the Wall Street Journal about a week ago, and it was talking about Walmart preparing to welcome their new shoppers, which are going to be AI agents. I thought this was fascinating, and there's a lot of talk in the retail media industry about this, about these agents being able to do things like reordering groceries, handing obscure prompts like give me a party plan for a unicorn themed party for my daughter, what to buy. I probably would have used that prompt myself over the years. But these agent-to-agent protocols that are being developed, they're not quite ready yet, but there's super exciting. There's a couple of key ones that to kind of know about, and the ones that are being talked about most in the industry is Google's agent-to-agent or A2A protocol, and then Anthropic's, they've got one called, and this is the one that has got the most chat really at the moment, is the Model Context Protocol, MCP. And there's a lot of chat in the industry about that. It seems like Amazon doesn't want to play. They're not allowing these agents access to Amazon. They're sort of building a walled garden for agents. But Walmart seems to be preparing for like a much more open ecosystem. But there's still a few, in my mind, there's still a few outstanding big questions. Number one, what happens to sponsored product ads? Will these agents see them? Like, that is a big question. I've had a few people sort of suggesting that, like, while the top results are there and being taken in by these agents, sponsored products will be included. So that's quite interesting, but it's still an open question. Will they be able to know the difference between paid placements versus organic results? And then what does it mean for the sites? I think that's another question that are we going to see like new false impressions or unpredictable spikes in traffic? And then are retailers going to have to optimize for different agent preferences? You know, so as sort of advertisers, we've spent the last, you know, gosh, hundreds of years trying to understand humans. And now we've got to understand bots or agents as well. So it's very interesting to see how this all develops.
Yeah, absolutely. How far off do you think we are from this, the agent-to-agent shopping? Or do you think some of those questions that you're saying that need to be figured out, do you think those need to be brought down the line a bit more before we're going to see this? What are your thoughts in terms of a timeline?
The vendors that I'm speaking to seem to be going full steam ahead with this. It's imminent, really imminent. I would say the next six to 12 months. I'm all, like, as I mentioned before, you know, in the retail media world that I'm involved with, I hear MCP, you know, thrown about a lot. That's the Anthropic Model Context Protocol. People are talking like it's already here. In reality, it's not quite yet, but I'd say it's really imminent, 6 to 12 months away.
No, it's very exciting. And John, I'm sure you'll be very happy to hear that too. Unicorn parties, just easy purchase.
That's it. Yeah, I'm going to need one of those in a couple of months' time. So that will be my first prompt. Yeah.
What are your thoughts on these figures, John? Like, do you think they're encouraging?
I'll do my usual two hats. Yes, they are encouraging because they are higher than zero, which is, you know, like I think a couple of the execs have said in the article that it is still negligible, these referrals. But it's nice to see them on the uptick. I think there's a lot of, oh, this is good, but this is bad here, because there might be referrals up from ChatGPT, but they're down from Google because of AI overviews, which have stopped sending anyone anywhere. And Perplexity is down as well in the same period. So as much as OpenAI seems to be opening up and sending a few more clicks from the sources that they've scraped, The rest of the industry seems to be on a bit of a downturn. Interesting that The Guardian's reference, because obviously they signed their licensing deal with OpenAI, so they must be pleased to see that that's bearing fruit in the shape of a few million clicks coming their way. But Reuters have had the same treatment and they don't have a deal. So it's not just to do with the licensing deals, I suppose, which really interested me, because as soon as I saw the story, I was like, oh, cool, that's because The Guardian have got their deal now. So the system works. They've paid up for it, and ChatGPT's sending them traffic. But no, Reuters is getting it too, and they don't have a deal. So interesting to see what the mechanics are. But yeah, it's like, it is a good thing to see it go up. But for me, yeah, it's still negligible, and there's still a lot of questions around how the news industry in particular will survive. Also, it's like JJ said earlier, like it is to major quality publishers as well. And I'm with you, JJ, completely, that it's good to see stuff being drawn away and interest being drawn away for advertising sites. I fear for the middle. I fear for like the middle ground there between the well-known major news brands and the made for advertising crap. I fear for the long tail middle ground, like the more niche publications that rely on passing out like kind of the specialist information and how they're going to be impacted. So yeah, I have many questions. Like I say, my usual two hats on this stuff. One thing good, one thing bad.
It really depends on what they mean by high quality. Because, you know, for example, I used to run the HuffPost in Australia, and, you know, there was two different metrics that I used to try to pay attention to whenever an article was written. It was, okay, how many viewers saw the article? That was obviously the number one metric you used to pay attention to. But then we started to do some of this long form content, and this content would probably get three times less the number of readers than the average sort of news article. Maybe even less than three times. But there was whenever we got into the data, there were some really interesting numbers that started to come out. The people that read those articles, they generally read them right through to the end, and we were able to track that. But what was also really interesting was that they were 80% more likely to come back again. So they were our loyal readers that were reading this long form content. So whenever I hear this ChatGPT news and that they are surfacing links to high quality authoritative sources, surely they're smart enough to go, let's not just look at pure volume, you know, because you're going to get news stories in there. And with news, it's all about whoever breaks the news first. But if high quality means that people are spending a long time on these sites and are frequenting them like regularly, then perhaps it's actually going to do really well for the middle and even the long tail that are quality as well.
That's good. I'm reassured.
perhaps.
Is there something that you think publishers should be doing to try and adapt their content strategies to try and maximize this visibility? I guess, obviously, from AI traffic. John?
I am really interested by this, obviously, because it's my job to be really interested by this anyway. But I think, like, leaving the age of SEO and moving into the kind of AEO, optimizing for AI era, is going to be, like, it's the next big thing for publishers. It's working out how to get content across, whether we have to start relying more on video, audio, whether moving away from like the written page, literally rethinking the homepage as it stands and rethinking the article format that we've all relied on since the start of the internet. This is, huge, huge question on what is next. And I'm trying to bury myself in it at the moment, but it fascinates me as to how we are going to optimize for this stuff, because that's the next big question. That's the next big trick.
JJ, have you anything to add to that?
Well, look, I would just hope and pray that this really goes back to, you know, what credible journalism used to always be about. You know, fact checking, you know, creating trust among readers. Like, yeah, of course, people are going to get things wrong, but, you know, at least they're doing the work. And if they're able to show that they are doing the work to provide high quality content, I would hope that these AI, the likes of ChatGPT, Anthropic, and the rest, are going to be able to understand this and drive traffic to those sites that are doing their best, you know, by providing credible, accurate, and balanced content, and being able to prove that it's credible, accurate, and balanced.
Yeah, I love that thought, JJ. That's like, I really, really hope, same as you, I really hope that we end up in a race to the top here rather than a race to the bottom in terms of getting the AI clicks. And I hope that quality wins out. I really hope that, but the cream rises. So yeah, I'm with you on that.
I think this is a good note to finish on, optimistic. Some great discussion, obviously, on some very close to heart topics for both JJ and John here, retail media and publisher journalism content. So yeah, thank you both so much for the discussion. JJ, really appreciate you joining us today and sharing your views.
Thanks, Grania. Thanks for having me. Thanks, John.
And yeah, John, as always, thank you so much.
Thanks very much, G. Cheers.
Thank you all for listening. And that is it for the MadTech podcast this week. We look forward to you tuning in next week.
You've been listening to the MadTech podcast, brought to you by ExchangeWire.